Welcome back to the Mawa Dissing Show. I'm Shirley Nordrum, and today I'm up in Red Bee visiting with David Manuel and the garden projects that he's doing up there. Good morning, David.
Bonjour. Good morning, Shirley. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. So what do you got going on up here?
We're doing a lot of planting. We're planting vegetables. We're making big gardens. This is our headquarters here at Red Bee behind the New Beginnings program. We're building a high tunnel and planting within the high tunnel. And then we have a big garden next to that. And then a big cornfield on the other side of that. We're planting food for the people of the Red Lake Nation.
Awesome. I'm kind of surprised you're growing the Bear Island Flint here.
Well, don't be surprised, Shirley. It's great Flint corn, great hominy corn. It tastes good. It's indigenous. We want to reintroduce good, healthy, indigenous food back to indigenous people.
I guess I meant surprised just in that, you know, when I was looking for the Bear Island Flint even 4 or 5 years ago, it was hard to find it. And so now people are growing it like, oh, you know, you're growing Flint, Bear Island Flint, we're growing it down on Leech, it's growing over on White Earth. How fast and how powerful that corn came back to us. You know, that's surprising me and it's making me happy.
Yeah, it's almost prophetic. I myself was given the seeds by a couple of friends of mine that went over to the White Earth Land Recovery Project farm conference.
Yep.
And I've always tried to get over there, but it seems like it's right at triggering time. In fact, this year I was tapping trees while you guys were at the conference.
I know you were.
And I really want to, hopefully I'll be able to make it one of these years. But anyways, I got that corn from there, and, you know, I just got a handful. It wasn't much. Like yourself, and I put it in the garden, and I grew it. I saved the seed, and I grew more, and I just kept doing that year after year. Last year, I did not have a garden because it was discovered I have arsenic in my well water.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I planted a garden, and I bought a 275-gallon water tote, which I'll be getting water here from our water source here at our garden, and I'll be bringing it back to my house until they drill me another well, which will happen this year. But the corn, I believe, is really important. The corn got us through the hard times, the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
I did a little reading, and our ancestors would store that corn, the squash they grew the previous year, in their food catches at their sugar bushes. So when they got to their sugar bush, they'd have some food.
Right.
So I see the value and importance of growing it, and then I took my seed supply and from home, and I donated it to our program, which is the Red Lake Local Food Initiative, and that's who I'm working for and what I'm talking about here today.
Cool. Yeah, I went to the wrong place when I come to see you, and I went to another place where you worked before. They're tilling up over there, too, so it's nice to see all the gardens popping up on Red Lake.
Yeah.
I wish I saw gardens popping up like that on Leech, but we're not quite there yet, but we'll get there.
You know, this year, here in Red Lake, because of the work we did at the Red Lake Traditional Foods Program, and now the program we're doing now, we've seen a renaissance, a resurgence of people interested in gardening. And the Red Lake DNR, through the Project Grow, goes around and tills gardens. And this year, they received a record number of requests for tilling.
Really?
So, yeah, I mean, it's a fact, man. We're getting back to our roots.
That's great. That's exciting. Yeah, and then we just walked across the street to visit with some guys that were planting another garden. And there was a young guy there, and he was happy talking about some Iroquois corn that he'd gotten in the mail from his friend. And so, you know, I just didn't have conversations like that with people even five years ago.
It was tough to find people who were not only into gardening but interested in planting seeds that originated from indigenous cultures like our own. That's my cousin Kelly Iceman, and he's got the bug. And it's a good bug. And, you know, the thing that I think what it is that we have that in our spirit. You know, our ancestors, you know, we weren't farmers. We were gardeners.
Gardeners, right.
Yeah. And but it's still part of our spirit. And I think that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't explain it any other way. We don't make people garden around here.
Can't make people garden.
But they're gardening anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much inside of us that's waking up. Like it's like a resurgence, a renaissance of so many things. It's like the lacrosse, the gardening, I've been part of 2 canoe building projects now. You know, people doing really cool stuff. Like they talk about blood memory. It's like our blood's waking up and hey, you know, you better get out there and garden.
Yeah, that's another way of putting it. Our spirit, or our blood, or our heart, or I don't know, our DNA. You know, that's what John Trudell liked to talk about. I'm a big John Trudell fan.
Me too.
Big Bob Marley fan.
Me too.
But anyway, you know, yeah, we get our inspirations from all kinds of places. And my inspiration came from the stories my mother told me. My mother was Ramona Manuel. She was actually a Sayers. Her maiden name was Sayers from Obashi, Panema. And growing up, she filled me full of story about the good life that the Indian people were living. And gardening was a part of that. Gathering and foraging was all a part of that. You know, the stories she told me. You know, and she was just, you know, from her days as a young girl. And when I moved back here, back home, you know, it took a while. It was a process, you know. But eventually, you know, I had tilled the garden. I got my garden going, and then the interest in the indigenous foods, you know, I caught that bug, and now I'm employed to actually live my destiny, or however you want to put it. I think it's wonderful that our nation and its leaders are making decisions and supporting us in doing these kinds of things. They're instrumental, no doubt about it. You know, I mean, they've taken it from our gardens and our backyards, and now we are a program. Part of our program is working with other departments, other programs, and we can't do it without them either. I really want to give special thanks to Darwin Sumner and Eugene Standing Cloud here working at New Beginnings, and the Oshki Majatada workforce. They're a great bunch of people. They're a work crew based out of the New Beginnings program, because there's only 2 of us that are actually funded to do this work. And so the tribe, seeing that, you know, it just wouldn't happen successfully with 2 employees. So they got all the other programs and departments to help us out. We've had the roads department bring over their equipment and dig out big old cement posts out of where our garden is now. We are located at the old forestry site in Redby. The forestry used to be here, and they received funding through the success of a settlement of a lawsuit some 10 years ago. We got something like $50 million out of that settlement. Half of it went to the membership, and the other half, 25, 26 million, went to the DNR to restore our forests. And so they had 3 big greenhouses built where they're propagating white pine, red pine, oak, and probably some other things too. I really don't know all what they do over there, but they are restoring our forest, and we got to take over their old site. And when we took it over, we had to do a lot of cleanup. I think they've been out of the site for about 8 years, and it was overgrowing with pretty large saplings and weeds and stuff, and we had to come up here and we had to clean it up, and the workforce out of New Beginnings was instrumental in making that happen. We got it tilled again through the help of New Beginnings program. They have a bobcat with a number of different attachments besides the forklift, and so I learned how to operate that machinery, and I'm having a blast.
I saw you on Facebook running that.
I'm having a lot of fun, and you know, learning how to, you know, I'm acquiring new skills. You know, even when it comes to gardening, you know, I mean, learning how to, what plants grow well together, what plants are antagonistic towards one another. I mean, my learning curve is pretty steep right now. You know, I mean. And I'm, you know, known for my garden, you know, but I've been learning so much this past couple months.
What all do you plant here now?
Oh, okay. Well, again, we mentioned the Bear Island Flint. We have a Three Sisters garden in the front here, and that's corns, beans, and squash. mm-hmm. all indigenous varieties. And then we have, you know, the tomatoes and the peppers and the cucumbers and the onions. And we have a couple different kinds of lettuces. I think that's...
Did you go with all heritage seeds then so you can seed save?
Yes, or? We did. So we're going to really be busy, come fall and over the winter, I know how to save some seeds, but, some seeds are biennials, like we talked about.
Yeah,
like
the carrots
and the Swiss chard, I think is biennial. I actually have that growing in my garden at home. But, I'm going to be propagating that. And part of the philosophy of what we're doing here is not only seed saving, but sharing those seeds.
Right.
And so, even though I work, I have a real hard time differentiating my work from not working. I bring my work home. I'm always reading about how, what to, in terms of gardening. And I guess it's become my life. And I don't have a problem with that.
I
still do a lot of other things, like we all do. We have other responsibilities to handle, but life outside and underneath the sun and even when it rains, it's a good life.
Yeah,
it really is.
And much like you, it's hard for me to differentiate what's work and what's life. The only thing that's really clear for me that I'm actually doing what I want to do and what I enjoy is when I'm training dogs. But the rest of, the gathering, the gardening, the making things, sitting with community, it's all like, sometimes I forget, am I working or am I just here for me?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I look at it as just being a human being.
Yep.
And we're just doing what we think is best for ourselves, and hopefully we think, we're doing it for the community.
Yep.
And I really consider myself fortunate, that I'm not making widgets down in the cities or doing, or pushing paper. Nothing against you paper pushers, no. we need them too.
Everybody,
my program would not exist if it wasn't for the for those people skilled in that manner to get the funding here, to get things rolling again on a program level.
Yeah.
And that is just the world we live in now, and we're making the best of it for our nation. We're taking that and making it work for us in our way. And I'll say it, the Red Lake way, but that's not to say that, I go over to White Earth for a lot of doings and other places too, but we're all doing the same thing.
Yeah, we are.
We're just doing it in different places, and it's always nice to go and visit and get new ideas and learn how to do things, a little bit more efficiently or a little bit easier or better. And
you always learn something. I remember when we had a big, I don't know what that was, we had a gathering over in White Earth and you were there. We were sitting in the garden eating.
Yeah.
And I think Michael Dahl come in and it was just a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And we were all talking about gardening, and he was telling a story about his mom always putting the garden where the chicken coop was the year before and having to move that.
Oh, yeah.
That garden,
remember
that story?
Yep.
He was all mad about, because he was a young guy, not realizing, why they had to move the garden all the time.
Yeah.
Naturally fertilizing. But you always learn something. I knew chicken coop was good, but I never thought of gardening that way, just by moving the coop and then putting the garden there,
So, yeah.
Things in the back of your mind, yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. I remember I was tripping on that bat guano, bat poop one
time,
And I'm thinking, where am I going to get bat poop from, I don't know no bat caves around here, what I'm saying? And then I started...
fish guts.
We got, that's another thing I want to thank the Red Lake Fisheries, helping out with the fish guts. And, they ground it up for us.
They
ran through a grinder. We had barrels bigger than 55-gallon barrels. Hey, cute. I want to say they were like 75 or 80 gallon barrels, and we put 6 of them out here, and we put another 1 or 2 over there, and then I got to hop in the tiller and till it in, and I got to go home and get yelled at by Laura, my wife. Oh, you stink like fish. And I said, that's my life, I stink. Oh, I'm just kidding.
So are they going to get into the business of making fish gut fertilizer?
Well, actually,
I think they could make money at that.
They actually are. They realize that, that's a value-added product, and they are, in fact, selling it to the general public.
Oh, okay.
So come and support our fishery and come buy some fish guts for your garden.
I might have to go visit them before I leave and find out, you know, how do you transport? Or
yeah, you need a pickup truck. Okay. They'll put it on a pallet and put it in the back of your pickup truck.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's how we got it. If they sell it in smaller amounts, I don't know about that.
Oh,
but,
cool.
You know, you could bring a bin or a barrel or something like that. It's by the pound.
How sweet is that? I mean,
Stinks and nothing sweet about it. It's no big deal. You know, you just think about what you're doing, what the end result is going to be.
Exactly.
It's like cleaning a fish or gutting a deer. You know, you got to get your hands dirty to fill your belly. You know, and that's what we're doing here. You know, these vegetables are going to end up on the plates of Red Lake Nation people. And so we're not putting any chemicals on them whatsoever. And that's, you know, I think about, you know, well, I'm going to be eating this stuff too.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to probably be sneaking the pepper home here and there.
It's pure food.
It is going to be pure food. And we got good water. We had our soil tested. We had our water tested. So there'll be no arsenic in the water. You know, that'll be watering the plants. You know, we brought the soil up to speed. You know, we do have a...
What did you have to do? Did you bring in some dirt? Or is that what you had?
We did. We brought in some peat from our peat bogs out west, and there was a big pile over there, and I just demolished it yesterday, spreading more around. We were talking about the garden across the way there. That's New Beginnings Medicine Garden, and that's where we're planting tobacco.
Yeah, it's on tobacco.
And other stuff too, some herbs. They have a strawberry garden on the other side. Yeah. So we're incorporating all kinds of methods and techniques, you know, borrowing from here and there. But ultimately, this is Chinabe.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know, that strawberry stuff, that's pretty new. But what a great way for like an elder that wants to have just some vegetables, but really can't garden too much because, you know, you don't have to weed it. You just have to water it. It's up high enough for them to be able to, you know, say if they were in a wheelchair or something, you know. You put some tea posts on the end and put their beans there. They could pick their own beans, you know.
Yep.
You gotta help people with where they're at, you know, and that's.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of that, you know, what we did too is we built 4 raised bed gardens. You know, not huge ones, but they're 8 feet long, a couple feet wide. Today, most of the crew is actually up in Panema working on our community garden up there. We're putting a community garden in each of the 4 districts that we have here on the reservation. Pug Kingbird and Murphy Thomas.
What?
Yeah. Everyone knows Murphy. Yeah. So anytime you guys, you know, see Murphy, ask him how his garden is doing.
Is
he picking the weeds?
Are you weeding that garden?
Yeah. Exactly. So he got it today. Sure, they're filling it with dirt right now and getting some plants in there. And so everybody ask Murphy about his garden here when we see him at the powwow.
All right. Wonder what he's going to plant.
I don't have no idea. We have, you know, I'm sure they provided him with something. Well, we have onions, too. We planted onions on the...
Gotta have onions.
Yeah, yeah. And we have, we still got to plant some potatoes. We got all kinds. We got the blue potatoes, the yellow potatoes.
We
I don't know if they're Viking or...
My sister...
They're Vikings.
We planted blue potatoes. The flesh was blue. Everything about them was blue.
Oh, okay.
We planted those a couple of years ago, and they did really well. But I'm not the potato lover. I mean, I don't like potatoes, but my sister is crazy about potatoes.
Oh,
she loved potatoes. And she said, you know what? I just like plain old Yukon Gold. So, you know, when you find something you like, obviously that's what you should grow, right? So
yeah.
There's another thing we were talking earlier about, you know, 7,000 varieties of corn. Potatoes, you know, the finger potatoes and all those. Man, there's a ton of potatoes out there that...
Oh, man, you know, I did a little weeding. And, you know, of course, the potato originated down in the Andes Mountains region. And each side of the mountain and different elevations, they all got their own microclimate. Yep. And then within that, their own varieties that grow the best in each of those climates and areas and soils. And, you know, they'll never go hungry because if one crop fails, well, they got hundreds more
to
draw from.
That's everybody says went wrong with that potato famine over there in Ireland.
Yep. And I want to talk a little bit about that. That's what we're doing with our corn. We talked about the Bear Island Flint, and we have that growing here. I also want to acknowledge Al Pemberton, one of our tribal council members. He had corn seed, you know, I want to say in a shed, a garage, or basement in jars. His grandfather, Peter Graves, used to grow corn down here in Redby. And I said, well, bring me some, man. And so he brought me some. And I planted it, and it's already a couple inches tall in my garden. And then we have the corn that Jack DeJarlie grows.
Right.
So right now we have three different kinds of Flint corn growing here in quantity here in Red Lake on the nation. And we hope to get out. We have a farm out west, and our plan for the program, the Red Lake Local Food Initiative, is to get out there and start doing some farming and producing vegetables on a larger scale. You know, you look at this garden, and yeah, it's a big garden, but it's not going to feed the nation.
No, it's not.
It'd be lucky to feed, you know, just, you know, some people.
Yeah.
So this is really an incubator of what we'll be doing in the right. future, but this is where it begins. It begins this year, here and now.
Right now.
But we're looking towards the future to actually not only providing vegetables for the schools, for the elderly nutrition programs, but also for sale. We'll be having a farmer's market here on the site.
Oh, nice.
You know, once we get people, you know, doing that and gardening on a larger scale, they can come down here and sell their vegetables.
Great.
We'll be having high tunnel training and actually providing people the opportunity to apply for what they call EQIP grants.
Right.
And I'm one of them. And okay. I'm going to be going through that training. We're actually putting up a high tunnel here, so I'll probably be kind of a layman trainer, you know, getting this experience. You know, I've never put no high tunnel up, but we're putting one up now. And so in the future, we want to empower our members to say, hey, man, you can do this. You can grow. We have the land, and you can do this, and you can provide food not only for yourself, but for your relatives and your friends, and even sell some
for
income. And that's what we're doing. And I also want to mention, too, we wouldn't be able to do this without our funders, the Notipagay Foundation and the First Nations Institute out of Longmont, I believe, Colorado. They're providing the seed money for us to get started. I also like to thank Sherilyn Spears, our project director, who actually made this all happen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Sherilyn Spears, Miigwech. And so here we're off and running. Like I said, we're planting time right now and also watering time, getting water on these plants. I'm running around, you know, changing hoses, making hoses longer, shorter, getting the sprinkler heads going, getting wet, getting soaked. But, you know, that's the life of a guy in the field.
It is. So when I'm just going to mention that when you're talking about feeding the nation, you know, I don't know what the membership of Red Lake is, but, you know, we did that study down in Leech Lake looking at, like, how much land would we have in production to be completely food sovereign. And we used that number 10,000 as the number of people that we were going to feed, which was kind of an interesting number because it's close to the enrollment number, but it's also close. Not everybody lives on a reservation, right? So,
yeah.
But it's close to the number of people, Indian and non-Indian, that live on Leech Lake.
Right.
So our big challenge came up is that, you know, Leech Lake Band just does not own the land base of, well, they own the land base, but not land that's usable for production of food. And the other thing of that is, so we needed about 5,000 acres in production.
Okay.
But that number can be greatly reduced if you take out the beef and pork, which was not a traditional diet. Because when we did that, we looked at, if we were raising beef, then we need to raise the food to raise the beef. So you can decrease your land base by a lot if you think about wild foods or you think about meat production in a different way, because you got the fisheries here.
Yes.
And, you know, another thing that we ate a lot of that you don't need a big land base for is rabbits. You can raise rabbits to eat.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that supplemented with wild food, or maybe looking at some smaller meat-producing animal like a goat, like a boar goat, a big heavy meat goat.
Yeah.
You know, you could reduce your land needs by doing some of that stuff.
Do chickens, they don't take up much space.
Chickens don't take up a lot of space. And, you know, chickens are great, man. I love chickens.
I love chickens, too. And I've been looking into that for my own protein needs, you know, because that's what we're talking about, protein.
Right.
And I have a friend and a neighbor who recently got chickens, and, and they got laying hens.
Yep.
And they're going to get some of their protein needs met through the eggs.
Right.
And I love eggs. I think eggs got a bad rap some years ago about their cholesterol content.
Oh, they did. Now they're telling you they're good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're telling you, you know, they have, well, wait a minute, no, they have the good cholesterol. Well, okay, then. So, you know, hopefully I can incorporate that into my own food sovereignty projects at home, because that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about food sovereignty.
Exactly.
And food security.
Right.
And, you know, these are new words that, you know, basically mean, you know, grow your own food. Provide for yourself.
It's doing what we did before.
Exactly, exactly. When we were hunting and foraging and tending our gardens, you know. But it does, you know, those terms, you know, are empowering, whether they're in English or
they are.
Or
that's what's cool about it.
Anishinaabe Mohin, and I'm going with it. You know, when I first got hired with this program, the first thing we did is we went off to Gun Lake, Michigan. Potawatomi Nation, where the Jijak Institute, funded by the Gun Lake Potawatomi Nation.
I met some of those folks.
Oh, man, they're awesome. They're great people. And they held a food summit, and it was 4 days long. I mean, it was nothing but indigenous food from all over Turtle Island. I mean, we had even people from South America come up and do presentations about how, you know, to process hominy and make all these different kinds of dishes. And they had 12 indigenous chefs that, you know, we were making hominy. Well, they took that hominy and they made these absolutely delicious lunch and dinners and breakfasts, you know, throughout the whole conference. And, you know, they really, you know, because when we talk about these foods, a lot of people scratch their heads and, well, how do I cook it? You know, do I make cornmeal mush? Yeah, you can do that too.
You can do that too. People don't know how to cook anymore.
They don't know how to. They know how to cook. What I keep coming back to is dominant culture. The dominant culture has us convinced that we have to do it their way. And I'm coming to the conclusion is that, no, we don't. Yeah. We don't have to do it their way. And we only empower them and their pocketbook and bank account when we deny our own sovereignty, our own power, our own way, our own indigenous knowledge. We need to put our indigenous knowledge back to work.
We do.
That starts with the fishing. That starts with the sugar bush and gathering, you know, the wild leeks and all the other things that the
fiddleheads and all the things that are out there.
And you take it a step further, you know, and you talk about, you know, the land that has been lost through treaties and encroachment by industry and big agriculture. Well, you know, we need to really step up our activism and say, you know, no, we don't. You know, we don't want your GMO russet potato. Mm-hmm. You know, we're tired of your McDonald's French fries killing us. And that's going to take a lot of education. You know, it's going to take it's intergenerational.
It is.
This hasn't happened overnight. It's been a progression throughout generations, over and over. You know, throughout the decades, where they really entrenched themselves and become the power. And it's about taking our power back. You know, I can, and you have, and to the listener out there who hears this, you can too. We express ourselves through many different ways. In the dominant culture, we vote for our with our dollars.
Yeah, we do.
You know, that's every day we do that. Now, you can go to the store and buy some chips and pop, you know, or you can do something else. Do something healthy. I am no different than anyone else. I grew up in the dominant culture. Watching Ronald McDonald commercials, and all that. I'm no different. We just need to start thinking a little bit more independently and how we can make ourselves a healthier, stronger individual within your own home. You know, if doing it for the nation don't thrill you, well, do it for yourself then.
Yeah.
You know, come on, man. Get with the program. That's what I'm saying. But it does take a greater, push from our tribal governments also. And they're starting to come around. Like my nation, Red Lake Nation, is behind us 100%. They like what we're doing. And we get visits from our tribal council members. I've seen a couple come down here. Annette Johnson of Panema, our treasurer, was down here.
Cool.
For our feast. And she's an active supporter right in there with us. And I also want to mention that we have a Facebook page, the Red Lake Local Food Initiative. I'm always posting pictures every day.
Posting good information.
Yeah.
Not only on this large scale of gardening, but, personal things that you can do, little steps. I like your page. It's
good stuff. Part of it, is I try to find a balance between what we're actually doing as a program and then putting information up there to provide information and empower the gardener. Because, we want you to garden. We want you to sugar bush. We want you to fish. We want you to be healthy most. And most of all, we want you to eat healthy. Every reservation around here and others too, nationwide, we're dealing with obesity issues, we're dealing with diabetes issues. We have young people getting dialysis now.
I know, is that horrible?
It's unnecessary if we follow a good, healthy diet.
Right.
And I implore you, the listener, to really think about this. Your diet, something we eat many times a day. Some of us more than others, but that's okay as long as you space out your meals. But eat healthy, eat fresh, eat local, and start a garden.
And the garden is good for everybody. We're sitting here talking, and I know you're a beekeeper, but there was a gigantic indigenous bumblebee. There he is right up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's 27 indigenous varieties of bees in Minnesota.
I can believe it.
And he's one of them. And I'm like, so you're drawn in, your garden is feeding the indigenous guy that, some of those bumblebees are really struggling to find their niche because pesticides, herbicides, Red Lake might be the stronghold for that because you guys aren't using any of that up here.
I feel real fortunate that, where I live, living on the reservation, I know that no one is spraying around, especially the farmer. I'm really lucky. I have three hives now, and I've never, when I first tasted the honey that my hives produced, it just blew me away. I never thought honey could, we all think of honey, and then there's only one kind. I'm telling you right now, golly, no, there is not. There, it is a little bit of an investment. I went and bought a new hive earlier in the spring here, and it cost me $222. I took a ride to, Aiken. And there's an old man over there, an old couple actually, and he has the machinery to make all those joints and the frames, and he's an old dude, and man, he makes some beautiful hives. How I got started was ordering through Man Lake Beekeeping Supply out of Hackensack. And those are perfectly fine too. They're great. You can buy them in kits and assemble them yourself, which is what I did because it's more, it's inexpensive than buying them. Prefabricated, pre-assembled, and people are even making them on their own using different methods. But again, if you can, make it work for yourself, become a beekeeper and provide your own sweetener. I put my honey on a lot of different things that I never thought I'd put honey on before, and it all makes it taste good. I do the same with. I didn't make a whole lot of maple sugar this year, but I still use on.
Uh-huh.
I love it on my meats. I know.
Oh, I know.
Oh my God! It just. I mean,
It's really good on meat.
The maple sugar, and it's not the same as brown sugar.
It's, no, it's not.
You know, brown sugar comes from the cane sugar. Mm-hmm. That's grown in different parts of the world, not around here. You know, and in fact, our maple sugar that we produce as Anishinaabe people was valued by other Indian nations. And when the French came, you know, and they got a taste of our maple sugar, they became one of the big buyers of our sugar.
They did.
Millions of pounds
of sugar.
Yeah. And it wasn't until the slave trade came to the Caribbean islands, you know, we lost them as a customer because they couldn't make us slaves and make it for nothing.
We're selling that.
And that's not to say anything bad about the slaves or anything. You know, they got a raw deal, but you know that was just that's the history.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. I want to talk about this for a minute. When you make maple sugar, and I'm talking to you guys that do this, you might already know this. Don't make it out of your filtered syrup. Make it out of the sap that comes straight out of the tree. Because when you filter it, yeah, you're making syrup. And I do that too because people don't want to see the sediment on the bottom of the jar. You know, and I made a killing this year. I did very, very good this year with my syrup and selling it, and paid a lot of my bills, man. It really did, and I'm going to do it again next year because it's going to pay a lot of my bills. But I also keep a lot for myself and I share it. But don't make it out of your filtered syrup. Make it from the raw. Make it from how it comes out of the tree to boil down, because all that sediment is actually nutrition.
It is. You know, that might change. You know how people want the amber, just clear. I don't like that. I like my syrup dark. I like everything dark. And then now I see it's going around on Facebook that they're studying maple syrup as being a healer for cancer.
Yep.
And the darker, the better. Did you see that?
Yeah,
the darker,
I've seen that
the
too.
Better. And I'm like...
And it has more flavor. Yeah,
it does.
You know, and again, that's a cultural thing. That's a dominant culture thing. They like things light and white. And the only difference is, you know, between the light and the dark is that, you know, when it first comes out, there's a higher sugar content and less of what I call the maple essence content. So what you get is a lot of clear water and sugar, you know, out of the first boils and whatnot. And that's good too, you know, but just don't filter it. And, when you make candy out of that first boil, that first run, it is lighter. Make it into candy, make it into sugar, and just do what you can. But you can make sugar out of your later, darker runs as well. And in fact, that's the candy I saved for myself at home. Because, I want to say this too, we all grew up in being miseducated about how light is better, you know, and now we're learning that the darker, heartier wheats make a better bread. And
the darker coffees, more potent.
All that, you know, and we're getting back and relearning what is good for us. And I'm no different. We're all here together, learning together, and I hope I imparted some good things here today.
Definitely. I'm really honored that you sat down and took the time to visit with me and share it with the people on the show.
Yeah, hey. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming out, Shirley, and I appreciate everything you've done for me, time that we've known each other. You're a great friend.
Oh, you are too. Miigwech.
Miigwech.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.